there! Thanks for listening to the Elevate Christian Church podcast. We exist as a church to connect people with God and each other. Today's message comes to us from our lead minister and preacher, Kevin Barton. We hope this inspires you, grows you, and challenges you in your faith and your walk with Jesus. Enjoy!
Well, good morning, Elevate. My name's Kevin. I am the preacher here if you don't know me. We're glad you're here if you're visiting for the first time. If you're looking for a church home, we say welcome home. Also want to welcome those of you who are watching us online this morning. We are in week five of a six-week series called Core. And I want to tell you about next week before we get into this week's message. Next week, we're going to finish up this series, and we're going to give you an opportunity to express the love you have for God, this whole series about loving God with our entire being, by considering to sponsor a child through an organization called Compassion International. So I'm going to close out the series, and then after the worship service, we'll have a table available with different kids around the world that you can sponsor. We'll tell you all about it next week, but I just wanted to get your hearts ready for that. We've done this before over the years. I'm super, super excited about it. And so I hope you will, hopefully you will prayerfully consider it. Let me just give you a quick review of the series to set us up for today. In Mark chapter 12, we've been saying this whole series that Jesus finds himself in a room full of politicians and lawyers, and they're engaging in what we think is a religious conversation, but for them it's more of a political conversation. There's all kinds of political parties in there, a group called the Sadducees, a group called the Pharisees, a group called the Herodians. There was another group called the Zealots that were there. Some of those Zealots were disciples of Jesus. And then also in that room, there were scribes, or what we would consider lawyers. And they're debating the word of God, and they're trying to trick Jesus into saying something wrong or something that would go against God's word. And so this scribe, this lawyer, comes up to Jesus, and I think, in my mind, he had a purer heart than everyone else in the room. And he says, Rabbi or teacher, what's the greatest commandment? And let me say this one more time. I know you've heard it 5 weeks in a row. When you boil this whole thing down, what means the most? What matters the most to God? And we have launched every week from this verse. It's the response that Jesus gives in Mark chapter 12, verse 30. He says, and you shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your mind, and with all of your strength. And so what he's saying is that we are to love God fully. We are to take a holistic approach, that he wants us with every fiber of our being to express love. Loving God should be the core of our essence. It should stem from our personhood, and the way we express our love for God through worship is one way, but I think the main way is to love our neighbor, love ourselves, to love God's people. So we're to love God with every facet. That means emotionally, that means spiritually, that means mentally, that means intellectually. And we've already looked at what it looks like to love God with all of our hearts, with all of our souls, and with all of our minds. Today, we're going to look at what does it look like to love God with all of our strength. There's an old kids song that used to sing this, and when the kids would say their strength, they would kind of hold their arms up and make a muscle, right? Love God with all your strength. Yeah. So, you know, what does that mean? To love God with all of our strength. So I want to begin by telling you there's two schools of thought on what it looks like to love God with all of your strength. The first school of thought is this: loving God with all of your strength means loving God with your talents and with your energy. Okay, and so in this school of thought, we show God, we love Him by using the energy we've exerted through crafting of our talents. And so the only illustration I could come up with that made sense in the moment was you think about a person who uses a lot of energy to train him or herself to play the guitar, right? And they become very skilled at it, but maybe they're playing in honky-tonks. If you don't know what a honky-tonk is, if you're under 40, you probably don't. It's like a redneck bar, or like these little dives. And so they go and they're in some kind of band, and they're using that energy, that talent to play the guitar. Perhaps that person becomes converted to Christ, and they say, look, I'm very talented. I'm a good musician, but I don't want to play in the honky-tonks anymore. You know, my appetite has changed since I've met God. And so now I'm going to join the worship band, and I'm going to make it my mission to put Chris Tomlin out of business because I'm, you know, such a good guitar player. We actually used to have a guy who went to church here who was a bass player who started out playing the bass with a country music singer named Jerry Reed. I don't know if you know Jerry Reed or not, like Smokey and the Bandit, that kind of stuff. And he stood right on this stage and played the bass. But when he came to God, he decided that that wasn't what he wanted to do anymore. And so he used his talents for the Lord. So in this school of thought, loving God with your strength is using that energy and that talent to express your love to God, to serve God by loving and edifying His people. So that's one school of thought. Does that make sense? All right. The second school of thought is this: loving God with all of our strength means that we are to love God with our physicality. All right, loving God with our bodies. Now, we all have something in common. Everybody in here has a body. We all have a physical body. Now, it seems a little weird, almost maybe borderline inappropriate that you would be talking about loving God with your body from the pulpit. And I think that stems from the fact that most people, including myself, have body image issues. Everybody in here has something, well, most people in here have something about their body they don't like, right? And so it makes you insecure. You have issues with it. For me, I have two issues. One is a more recent issue. It's my hair. I went gray very, very early, and I'm 12 years older than my wife, and she looks very young for her age, and I look very old, and I get tired of people thinking that's my daughter when we go out to eat. And I tried to dye my hair, and it went horribly wrong. Some of you witnessed it. And she likes my hair, so I'll let it be, because I don't need to impress anyone but her. Amen? All right. So, good. Now, my whole life, an issue that has kind of bothered me a little bit about my body is my height. I've always been the tallest kid in my class. I've always felt like a giant. In fact, when I was like in middle school, I kind of did the poor posture, kind of slumping, because I just kind of wanted to be on everyone's level. And I remember my grandmother like pushing me in the chest and putting one hand in my chest and one hand in my back and straightening me up and said, you're tall, you're good looking, be proud of your height. But it always bothered me because, you know, people would make comments, how's the weather up there? Made me want to spit on them and say, it's raining, I had this one kid when I switched junior highs from seventh to eighth grade, and I'd never met him, and he was like, hey, Slim, hey, too tall, you know, do you play basketball? And I'm like, yeah, I do. Do you play mini golf? You know, because he's just this little guy. And so I've always kind of had these issues with my body, and I think all of us do. We all have these issues. And so it prohibits us sometimes from expressing to God with our bodies, because when we talk about it, it makes us feel a certain way. Here's what I would say to you. In this school of thought, it's really not about a body issue. It's about using our bodies to glorify God and His church. I don't know what the final count was between adults, kids, and teenagers. It was hovering around 60, but we had 60 people here yesterday using their bodies to kind of do some work and kind of get some things cleaned up and straightened up for Easter, doing some painting and things like that, using our bodies. And so under this school of thought, our physical bodies are important. You've ever heard the term stewardship? That's always talked about money. Like, God gives you a certain amount of money. Be good stewards with your money. Well, under this principle, God gives you a certain amount of days to live. So steward your body well. Treat your body well. Make the most of it. We all have a number of days. God has numbered our days. And Psalm 39, verse 4, it says, O Lord, make me known my end, and what is the measure of my days? Let me know how fleeting I am. And I've told you before, the Hebrew language is very pictorial. And so the picture we would get that I would give you is, and I forgot my tape measure today, so just imagine I have a tape measure. Taking a tape measure, it's God kind of measuring out, this is how many days of life you have. And there's nothing really you can do about it. When God decides it's time to go, it's time to go. And we all have our days are numbered. God has measured. He knows exactly how many days I'm going to live. So he takes the tape measure out, and let's say it's in inches and it's 82 inches. He says, Kevin, these are your days. You have 82 years. Now, how you take care of yourself in those 82 years is left up to you. All right. So if we take good care of our bodies now, they're going to serve us better as we get older. Let's say it this way. Maybe a person lives to be 80 years old. All right. But they don't take really good care of themselves. So they spend the last 20 years of their life reaping the benefits they have sown in the first 60 years. Diabetes, heart problems, breathing issues, right? And so a lot of times you'll see older people, and I'm certainly not making fun of you, please understand that, because I'll be there one day too, but they get caught in this endless cycle of doctor visits. I was talking to an old preacher friend of mine last week. He's in his 80s. His name is Chuck. And, I said, well, how's it going, Chuck? And we were talking. I was like, what's your week look like? And he said, well, I've got a cardiologist appointment on Monday. I got to meet with the pulmonologist on Tuesday. I meet with my orthopedic specialist on Wednesday, my dermatologist on Thursday, my podiatrist on Friday. Saturday, I'm going to stand in line at the pharmacy all day to get all the prescription pills. And then Sunday, I got to get my tackle box out and kind of divvy up my pills. And then I repeat the process. And he will readily admit that he did not take care of his body when he was younger. And so he's kind of reaping the benefits. So loving God with all of your strength to some means taking care of your body, taking care of yourself. I would say it this way. This is my motto in life. Stay as healthy as you can for as long as you can. Because one day your flesh is going to fail. One day your body's going to fail. The quantity of your life has already been determined by God, but the quality of your life is determined by you. So those are the two main views, loving God with my energy and my talent or loving God with my physicality. And most people try to make this an either or. Right, I'm going to use my talents, but I'm not going to take care of myself, or I'm going to be really diligent about taking care of myself, but I'm not going to use my talents. I don't believe it's an either or. I believe it's a both and. So let me explain. The better we take care of our bodies, the more energy we're going to have to pour into our strengths. And when we use our bodies to manifest those strengths into loving and serving God's people, we're going to be blessed. So it's a both and situation. Now, for today's message, because I have a limited amount of time, I'm going to take a sharp right, and I'm going to talk about what it looks like to love God with our strength through taking care of our bodies physically. Because I believe if we take care of our bodies physically, our quality of life is going to be uplifted, and we're going to have more strength to pour into our talents and bless people. So I want to talk about what it looks like to take care of our bodies physically. And so if you have the outline on our app, or it's going to come on the screen, there are four words I'm going to use to express, to show how to love God with all of our strength. To how to love God physically. And for some of us, myself included, these are four dirty little words, man. These are four words that we try to avoid. So let's just jump right in. How do we love God with all of our strength physically? Number one, the first word, diet. Diet. Eating well. Being mindful of what we put in our bodies. And let me just pause right here and say this, right? You ever go into a church, especially if you're not really churched, and you kind of look around and you hear people talk, but then you know Christians that call themselves Christians and they don't walk the walk. And what do we call them? Hypocrites. Bunch of hypocrites. I would be hypocritical on this because I do not always, well, almost never, do I eat well. Good food, to me, tasty food is not really good for you. But we're kind of at a critical point here in America. The American diet is the worst diet on the planet. So many people are dying from diet-related diseases. And so what we put in our bodies really matters. And again, I'm going to tell you, I struggle with this one because I like food. It kind of reminds me of the story I heard about this great big old guy who, you know, he would bring donuts every day to work. He'd bring sometimes one, sometimes two dozen donuts for everybody. And he was just a big old fella, and he decided that he was going to go on a diet. And so he stopped bringing donuts. And so like 6 days went by, and there were no donuts. Well, like on day seven, everyone showed up to work, and there were the donuts. And they said to the guy, hey, I thought you weren't going to bring any more donuts in because it was a temptation for you. And he said, well, listen, man, these are special donuts. These are God's donuts. Okay, well, what do you mean by that? He said, I woke up this morning and I prayed this prayer. God, I really want a donut. I've been good for 7 days. I just want a donut. So if it's your will for me to get donuts, when I go by the donut shop, if there's a parking lot or there's a parking spot available right up front, then I believe it's your will to get donuts. And he said, sure enough, the eighth time around the parking lot, there was a parking spot, right? Listen, if I could go on a donut diet and be trim and fit, I would have my problem solved because I love donuts. Now, I don't like, I like all donuts, but Dunkin' Donuts are not my favorite. Krispy Kreme donuts are not my favorite. And, you know, they've got these little bougie donut shops all around. They're not my favorite. My favorite donuts are good old American-made donuts that you buy at Walmart. In particular, sugar donuts. Right? So Walmart has donuts that come in a box like Dunkin' Donuts, but the sugar donuts that you get come in these rectangular boxes of glory. And they don't give you 12, they give you 13 of them. And so, like, I got to avoid Walmart because I can't resist myself. We'll get a box of those, and by the time we even get home, two of them are gone. In my belly, get in my belly, right? And then I'll get home and I'll eat two more. All right. So there's 13 of them and there's nine left. And I'm saying, all right, there's six other people in this house. So they each get a donut and a half. I've had my four. They can have a one and a half donuts. like 20 minutes go by, and I'm like, y'all gonna eat these donuts or not? And they don't. And so, like, literally in the course of a day, the first day, I can eat 10 donuts. I'm 6'5". I need a lot of calories to keep this body going. I just cannot resist myself. But here's what I know. I know if I eat better, I'll feel better. Because I've done it before. And I want you to take a look in just a second in the book of Daniel. I want to set the scene here. The book of Daniel was written during what's known as the Babylonian exile. Jerusalem was besieged by the Babylonian Empire. And when Jerusalem was taken over, rather than kill everybody, what they did is they carried off from Jerusalem to Babylon the youngest, the healthiest, the brightest people they could find so they could teach them the ways of Babylon and they could use their intelligence in their youth to further extend the Babylonian Empire. So the only way I could really, the way I would explain it to us is imagine we invaded Canada and we just took over Canada. And we said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take the top scientists, the top doctors, the top engineers, and we're going to bring them all to Washington, D.C., and we're going to use their brightness and their talents to further our life here in America. So that's what was going on in Babylon. Well, you have a guy named David, and there's three other guys. We know them as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. When they get to Babylon, the king has a handler, and the handler says, all right, guys, you're here. We're going to train you. We're going to teach you. We're going to use your skills and your talents. And here's the caveat. You get to eat what the king eats. You get the choice meats and food and cheese and wine and all these things that are probably not the best for you. You can have any of this. All right, some of the food they offered was not clean for Jewish people to eat. And so Daniel and his boys say, listen, we don't want to do that. Just let us eat vegetables and drink water. And the guy said, well, I can't do that. You might lose your strength. And then the king, you know, the king's going to get on me. And he says, well, just test us. Give us 10 days to do this. All right, and we'll pick up in Daniel chapter 1, verses 15 and 16. At the end of the 10 days, it was seen that they were better in appearance and fatter in flesh. Now, that term fatter in flesh doesn't sound very flattering, does it? I don't want to be fatter in my flesh. In the Hebrew, it literally means they looked better, shinier, and more robust. They looked more defined than all the youths who ate the king's food. So the steward, that's the king's handler, took away their food and wine, and the wine they were to drink, and gave them vegetables. Okay, so I'm sure they were a little disappointed in Daniel and his boys. You know, now we got to eat, you know, carrots and drink water because of you. But they ate better, so they felt better, and they looked better, and they were able to perform better. The better we eat, the better we feel. There's no denying that. And the better we feel, the more we'll be able to use our body for God's glory. Some of you remember years ago, we did a Daniel fast here at the church, and I invited, I think pretty much everyone on the leadership team did it and their spouses, and then we invited anyone in the congregation to do this with us, and I think it started with 100. I don't know how many it ended with. I think a lot of people did it, but we did it for 21 days. So for 21 days, you could basically go to the produce section in Kroger, and that's the only place you could go. If it was in a box, if it was in a can, if it had preservatives, if it had sugar, if it had caffeine, you know, if it had trans fats, it was just basically fruits, vegetables, some whole beans and stuff like that for 21. On day four of that fast, I thought I was going to die. And I don't mean that like jokingly. I mean, I had sharp, searing pains going up through my kidneys in my back. And I was like, I told my wife, I said, this Daniel fast is going to kill me. This is why I don't eat healthy, because it's going to kill you. And so I called an old preacher friend of mine who had done this before. And I said, look, I'm dying here. He said, that's your body adjusting because you're not feeding it all that sugar and caffeine and those toxins. He said, give it a day or two and you'll feel better. So around day six, I started feeling a little better. I started feeling energetic. All right. And I made it through the 21 days. Now, I'm not going to lie. I would go to Target and do some shopping or go up there in that plaza, and I would smell like Longhorn, like the steak, because you couldn't have meat, and it did something to me psychologically, but I made it through the 21 days. Here's why I'm telling you this. I was in my 40s when I did that, and I had never felt better in all my life, not only physically, but spiritually. I think we underestimate how we take care of our bodies physically, how that affects us spiritually. And I'll never forget, I was excited on the 21st day to break that fast. And I went up here, I won't name the restaurant because I don't want to give them a bad rap, but I went up there and had the worst hamburger I've ever had in my life. I don't think it was the restaurant's fault. I think it was my body saying, what are you doing? Like, yeah, you've been feeding me so well, and now, of course, I'm removed from the Daniel fast, and I feel terrible again. It matters, our diet. 1 Corinthians 10:31 says, so whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. So diet's the first word to love God with all of our strength, and so I'll just issue a challenge here. You know, watch what you eat. A little less French fries, a little more water, you know, so do make some changes and you'll start feeling better. The second word is a very dirty word in some households, exercise. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this one because we all know we should exercise more, right? And there's all kinds of excuses why we don't exercise. I'm too tired. I can't afford it. I don't want to exercise alone. I even heard someone say, well, I'm not comfortable exercising with the opposite sex. I'm like, well, what about your basement? It's no fun. I'm never going to stick with it. I'm too far gone. I'm too old. We have these exercises. And so what I want to do is I just want to borrow a slogan from Nike. Simply says, just do it. Find a way to be more active. Right? Like, it's a beautiful spring day. So instead of going home and watching cars go around in circles till you fall asleep, go for a walk. You know, do something. Be more active. Romans 12:1 says, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual act of worship. Again, do you see the correlation between your body and your spirit? Present your bodies. This is your spiritual act of worship. The better we take care of our bodies physically, the better off we're going to be spiritually. When I exercise, I always feel better. I always sleep better. I always study better. And I always handle stress better. So that's the second word. Third word, how to love God with all of your strength. And this is a lost art in our country. Rest. Rest. I'm going to say it one more time for dramatic emphasis. Rest. We live in a red line state all the time. Yeah, when your car's like going into the red, it's redlining. That's your gauge is saying, hey, man, you need to slow it down here. Bring the RPMs down. And we do not rest well in this country. One of our elders kind of brought me onto this podcast. It's this guy I've been listening to. His name's Marty Solomon. And I just want to kind of use an illustration he used. I want to take you to Genesis chapter 2, verse 2. This is the creation account, God creating. And, you know, this is day 7. On the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all the work he had done. So I always ask this question. You know, I preach on Sabbath every year here. Why did God rest? Do you think God was tired? I mean, he spoke everything into existence. He didn't even have to get up off his couch in heaven if he didn't want to, right? Was God tired? Absolutely not. He rested as a gift for his people because he knew that so many people in this world would find their identity in what they do, not who they are. They would find their identity in being busy. I know some people, and sometimes I'm this way, if I find myself resting, I feel lazy. I better get up and do something. You know, well, you know, you already put in 80 hours at your job, but you know, you better get up and do something. And we don't rest well. So I want to take you to Exodus really quick, chapter 1. This is when the Israelites were taken slave. They were enslaved by the Egyptians, okay? So it's kind of a long passage of scripture. Stay with me, stay awake. Here we go. Pick up in verse 8. Now there arose a new king over Egypt that didn't know Joseph. And he said to his people, behold, the people of Israel are too many and too mighty for us. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they multiply, and if war breaks out, they join our enemies and fight against us and escape from the land. Therefore, they set taskmasters over them to afflict them with heavy burdens. They built for Pharaoh stone cities, Pithon and Ramses. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied, and the more they spread abroad. And the Egyptians were in dread of the people of Israel. So they ruthlessly made the people of Israel work as slaves. They made their lives bitter with hard service in mortar and brick and all kinds of work in the field. And all their work, they were ruthlessly made them work as slaves. So basically, all day long, every day, the Israelites got up and made bricks. But then they were freed from their slavery. And we know the story of Exodus. They crossed the Red Sea and they get out into the wilderness. And when they're in the wilderness, Moses goes up to Mount Sinai and God gives what to Moses on Mount Sinai? The Ten Commandments. And I want you to hear one of the commandments. Exodus 20, verse 8 and 11. God says, remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. The word holy means set apart. This day's got to be different than the other 6 days. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is the Sabbath to the Lord your God. And on it you shall not carry out any work. You or your son or your daughter or your male servant or your female servant or your livestock or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days God made heaven and the earth and the sea and all that is in them, and he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Now, here's what I want you to understand. You have a generation of people who don't know how to rest. Their entire lives, day after day after day, was to get up and to make bricks, to move bricks, to stack bricks, 7 days a week, sun up to sun down. They didn't rest, and their identity was found in how many bricks they could make. And for them to see, one of the commandments from God was take a day and rest. Your sons, your daughters, everything, just let everything rest was one of the most beautiful things they could envision. And here's what I want to tell you. God desires for you to rest. He desires for me to rest, to not have to feel like we have to be busy from sun up to sundown 7 days a week. Our identity is not in what we do, no matter how important you are. It's in who you are and who you belong to. We are designed by God. We are commanded by God. We are commissioned by God. We are shown the example by God for us to rest. And I got out of the habit of that. And when I get out of the habit of that, I start to burn out. And that's when those questions come. Can I do this? Am I fit for this? And so I have been very, very intentional the last 2 weeks about my Sabbath. Our Sabbath is different probably than yours because Sunday's a work day for me. Sunday's a work day for my wife. It's Friday. And man, I don't make any plans. I don't want to be around any people except my family. All right, so I get up, I move slower. I just kind of maneuver through the day. I turn my phone off because I will not get rest if I don't turn my phone off, right? And I just rest. I just go slower. And I'm very intentional about that day. And here's the crazy things. I get more done in the other 6 days than I did when I was trying to work 7 days a week. God works things out like that. We are designed to rest. Psalm 127:2 says, "It is in vain that you rise up early and go to rest or go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil." And I love this part here. "For he gives to his beloved sleep." So, diet, exercise, rest. Now, this one might catch you off guard. Using our physicality and loving God with all of our strength, there's one more word: sexuality. Sexuality. We don't think about this very often, do we? But when we use our bodies to abuse our sexuality, we're hurting our bodies, we're hurting God, we're hurting Christ. Paul talks about this, and we use this passage. If we catch someone smoking a cigarette, we say, "Oh, your body's a temple," or somebody eating, "Oh, your body's a temple." That's great. But in the context of your body being a temple, Paul is talking about your and I's sexuality. 1 Corinthians chapter 6 is another long passage. Stay with me. Picking up in verse 12, Paul says, "All things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be dominated by anything. Food is meant for the stomach and stomach for food, and God will destroy both one and the other. The body is not meant for sexual immorality." Okay, and you know, we know what sexual sins are. One that we forget to put in there, which is a great epidemic of the church, is pornography. It's another way to abuse your sexuality. So the body, our physical bodies, are not meant for sexuality. And let me stop, and I may get myself in a little trouble here. God is not saying don't have sex, right? Sex is good. I like sex. My wife likes it. With each other, right? Not with anybody else. So God's not being a joy kill here and saying, "Hey, you know, it's only for procreation, don't enjoy it." That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about going outside of the marriage bed. And not just with our bodies, but even Jesus takes it a step further with our eyes and our minds and lust. We get that. So the body's not meant for sexuality, but for the Lord, and the Lord for the body. And God raised the Lord, and I will also raise us up by his power. Do you not know that your bodies are members of Christ? And this sounds very graphic here, and I'll explain what's going on. Shall I then take the members of Christ and make them members of a prostitute? Never! Exclamation point. Or do you not know that he who is joined to a prostitute becomes one with her? For it is written, the two will become one flesh. But he who is joined to the Lord becomes one spirit with him. Flee. This is the only sin God tells us to run from. He tells us to avoid, to resist, but sexual sin, he says, run, because you and I are humans, right? And our flesh takes over. Flee from sexual immorality. Every other sin a person commits is outside of the body, but the sexually immoral person sins against his own body. So we went over this in my Lyft group, and that's a hard question to answer. What does that mean, you sin against your own body? And one of our Lyft group guys, Jesse, he said, "Well, you know, when you're married, it says the two become one flesh, And so maybe it's when you sin sexually, you're sinning against that one flesh that you are, as husband and wife. Well, that was a brilliant interpretation. Or do you not know that your body, here it is, this is the passage we quote to people, is the temple of the Holy Spirit within you, whom you have from God. You are not your own. You were bought with a price. So glorify God with your body. And so you could loosely translate that, glorify God with your sexuality. Don't abuse it. God gave us this great gift. I've always thought it was an amazing thing that God creates Adam and then he creates the most perfect, beautiful woman in the world. They are not clothed, and he gives this command, be fruitful and multiply. So loving God with all of our strength includes our diet, our exercise, the way we rest, and our sexuality. Our body is a temple, and we take care of it. We value it. We use it for God's glory, and we love God with all of our strength. So let me tell you about my day yesterday. We had a work day here, and I got up and left the house at 5:30 in the morning in a panic. We'd already gotten all supplies, but I'm just like, I want to make sure everything's ready to go. And so I got here and I had shorts on and a t-shirt and tennis shoes. And I had a wedding up on the other side of LJ. So I grabbed my suit. I have one suit. It's my black suit. I use it to, I'll marry you in it and I'll bury you in it. It's the only suit I have. And I grabbed my shoes. And I grabbed my little Bible for my wedding, and took off, and I was here, and I was supposed to leave at 10:45, but I felt bad because everyone was still working, so I left about 11:15, and I hightailed it up to the North Georgia Mountains, a couple hours away, and I got out of the car, and I met with the bride, and I met with the groom, and I wasn't at the rehearsal, so I met with the father and said, here's how we're going to hand out, and then I had a few minutes to relax, and so I hung out with people and talked, and I had this suit I don't like wearing. It so I told everyone I'm gonna wait to the last possible minute to put this suit on. And so it was 4:20. The wedding was at 5. I was like, all right, I guess I'll go put my suit on. I had brought my suit, pants and jacket, I had brought my tie, I had brought my socks, and I had brought my shoes. And I was like, where's my shirt? I don't have a shirt. And I was in a panic because we were in the middle of nowhere, and there's no way I'm going to find a Walmart anywhere around here and get in and find a shirt. And so I began to walk around, and I was the weird guy at the wedding. I was like, "Hey man, that's a nice shirt. You got another one of those?" Right? It's like the kid in high school. Hey, you know where I can get some weed? That's what I was doing with the shirt. I was going around asking everyone, do you have a shirt? And I talked to the, Cecily is her name. It was her son that got married. She goes to church here. And I said, Cecily, I got a problem. I don't have a shirt. And I've asked everybody I can ask if they have a shirt. I don't know what I'm going to do. And the photographer swept her off to take pictures. And I said, oh man, what am I going to do? And so I had a Virginia Cavaliers t-shirt on, sweaty from work day. And I said, man, this isn't gonna work. So I turned it inside out. And you could still see like the logo coming through. And so I was like, what am I gonna do? So I flipped it back in and I turned it backwards and it was like up to here on my neck. And so then I flipped it around again and turned it inside out and put it on backwards and kind of like tucked it in my pants as tight as I could go. And I put my jacket on, all right? And so I had a Virginia Cavaliers shirt inside out, backwards on, and a suit, and it was tucked in my belt, and I felt so subconscious about this, especially after I was asking everybody for their shirt. And I walked out thinking, man, everyone's gonna notice this, they're gonna look at me, they're gonna laugh at me. And like 10 people was like, man, you look nice. You clean up nice. I like that sporty kind of Miami Vice look. You look good. And I was like, all right, amen. So next time I got to wear a suit, I'm going to bring a gray shirt, turn it inside out, and wear it backwards, right? My point is this. I want to talk to you if you're not real happy with your body. We all have these body issues. And I think everybody sees it. everybody's looking for it. And I don't think that's true. I think that's our own insecurities. See, I think for a lot of people, the issue is not loving God with everything. It's loathing ourselves with everything. We let our own self-image, our own self-worth, our own self-identity get in the way of loving God. I was reading this article about Michelangelo and the famous David statue. did you know there was an 18-foot tall piece of marble weighing several tons, and many sculptors before Michelangelo came to examine this big rock, this giant rock, and there was kind of like there was an impurity, a vein of impurity going down it, and they said, "We can't work with this. We can't work with this. We can't work with this." And finally, Michelangelo came and examined this big thing, and he saw the flaws, and he said, "I can work with this." And of course, we know that in 1501, he was petitioned to make what's called David the Giant Killer, this beautiful interpretation of King David out of this imperfect stone. And I wonder how many people in here feel like that. They feel like that giant stone. They have a flaw, and you believe that that flaw is something that renders you useless. I don't want you to forget that buried down inside of each one of us is this image of God Himself. God made us and designed us the way we are. And even if you don't think you're beautiful, God thinks you're one of the most beautiful creatures on the face of the earth because He designed you that way. And so I want to challenge you. I want to encourage you. I want to plead with you to not just talk spiritually about the things of God, but to understand God gave you a physical body, and to eat right, to take care of it, to exercise, to rest and replenish yourself, and then to use your sexuality for the glory of God, not to defame His name. God looks over all of our imperfections. He sees us as blameless children of God when we come to Jesus Christ. And if you don't know Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, and you've been kind of walking around your whole life, putting yourself down, and I want to invite you to have someone pray with you, or if you need Jesus Christ in your life, come up front, and we'll walk you through what it means to give your life to Him. Because one day, whether it's ash or a bag of bones, our bodies are going to rise. The graves of the dead are going to burst forth, and we're going to rise up and be called up into the clouds, and we're going to be given new and glorious bodies, and we'll be spending eternity with God. I don't want anyone in here to miss out. I don't want you to miss out because you think that you're not worth God's trouble. You're the reason, I'm the reason He went to the great lengths He did so that He could bring you into a saving relationship with Jesus Christ.
We hope you enjoyed listening to our podcast today. If you'd like to learn more about Elevate or partner with us in what God is doing here, check out our website at elevatecc.com. Until next time, God bless you, and thanks again.